Public Key Cryptography.
It would be easy to see the development of post-war cryptography as being dominated by the development of the computer. Certainly, code makers have exploited the power of computers to scramble messages, and the only hope for code breakers has been to use even more powerful computers to try to unscramble them. However, the most important post-war breakthrough in the science of secrecy has nothing to do with computers. In fact, it is a conceptual rather than a technological advance, one which defies all common sense and which solves a fundamental problem in cryptography. To explain the problem, cryptographers often talk about three characters, Alice, Bob, and Eve. Typically, Alice wants to send a secret personal message to Bob, but Eve, the eavesdropper, is trying to intercept the message. Naturally, Alice wants to protect the message by scrambling it, but in order for this to work, Bob has to be able to unscramble the message, which means that he needs to know the recipe that Alice used to scramble the message in the first place. The scrambling recipe is known as the key, and Alice has to somehow get the key to Bob without it falling into the hands of Eve. This predicament is known as the key distribution problem. In the 1970s, everybody using secret codes, from banks to the military, had to find a way around the key distribution problem. Essentially, the only solution was for Alice to send the key to Bob via a trusted courier, so that she could use the key to encrypt a message at a later date. Banks employed special dispatch riders, men and women who had been vetted, and who had to be among the company's most trusted employees. These dispatch riders would race across the country with padlocked briefcases, personally distributing keys to everyone that the bank would communicate with over the next week. The bank could then use the keys to send encrypted messages over a phone line or via a computer link. The distribution of US government keys is the responsibility of ComSec, short for Communication Security. And in the 1970s, they would transport tons of keys around the world every day. When ships carrying ComSec material came to dock, crypto custodians would march on board, collect stacks of cards, paper tapes, floppy disks, or whatever other medium the keys might be stored on, and then deliver them to the intended recipient. Key distribution might seem like a mundane issue, but it was the greatest problem in cryptography. It was the weakest link in the chain of security, because there was always the risk of a courier selling keys to the enemy. Also, as communication networks grew, so did the problem, and it became clear that key distribution was turning into a logistical nightmare, making secure communication prohibitively expensive. Finding a solution seemed to be impossible. If Alice wants to share a secret with Bob, namely the message, then she must first agree another secret with him, namely the key. The only way to send the key securely is to deliver it in person or via a courier, in which case Alice might as well deliver the message in person or via a courier. The entire cryptographic community accepted that the key distribution problem was unavoidable, except, that is, for three maverick Americans. The first maverick was Whitfield Diffie, one of the most ebullient cryptographers in the world. He introduces himself as being a real-life Tigger. No matter his weight in pounds, shillings and ounces, he always seems bigger because of the bounces. Back in the early 1970s, Diffie foresaw the digital revolution and the advent of the internet, but at the same time, he knew that the full benefit of the information age could only be realized if the key distribution problem could be tackled. He told others about his ambition to solve this age-old problem, but over and over the response was a mixture of amusement and skepticism. Then, on a trip to California, he bumped into Martin Hellman, a kindred spirit and a professor at Stanford University. They were soon joined by another intellectual rebel, Ralph Merkel, and together the three of them set about trying to find a solution to the key distribution problem. They began by stripping the problem down to its bare essentials. One of the best ways to analyze the problem is to think of encryption in terms of locking a message inside a box. Alice puts her message in a box, puts a padlock on the box, and then sends it to Bob. Unfortunately, he cannot open the padlock and get to the message in the box unless he has a copy of Alice's key, and we run into the key distribution problem again. Alice cannot securely send Bob a message unless she has already sent him the key. Diffie, Hellman and Merkel came up with dozens of ideas, but all of them were flawed. They soon became known as the Fools, because only a fool would attempt to solve such an impossible problem. Then, in 1975, the Fools made a breakthrough. Instead of the sender, Alice, taking responsibility for security, what if the receiver, Bob, played the crucial role? They pictured a scenario in which Bob designed a padlock and a key. Although he would make only one copy of the key, which he would keep with him at all times, Bob would manufacture hundreds of padlocks and distribute them to post offices all over the world. Then, if Alice wants to send a message to Bob, she would simply go to her local post office, ask for one of Bob's padlocks, and then lock the message in a box locked using Bob's padlock. Alice and anybody else can easily lock Bob's padlock shut, but only Bob has the key to open the padlock. The key never leaves Bob, and so the key distribution problem no longer exists. By using Bob's padlock instead of one of her own, Alice could send a completely secure message to him, a message that Bob, and only Bob, can access. By simply reversing the accepted protocol, by putting the onus on the receiver to provide the padlock, Diffie, Hellman and Merkel had made the greatest breakthrough in the history of secret communication. The cryptographic establishment had always accepted the key distribution problem as an avoidable obstacle, but the Mavericks had questioned the axiom and proved that it was not an inevitable part of secret communication. Of course, in the computer age, we cannot use real padlocks to secure messages, and scientists had to develop a mathematical padlock, a virtual analogue of the metal padlock. By 1977, researchers at Harvard had designed just such a mathematical padlock, a system known as public key cryptography, an invention which went on to form the basis of a $200 million company. Nowadays, mathematical padlocks are at the heart of the internet explosion, helping to secure sensitive emails and guaranteeing that snoopers cannot steal your credit card details when you make an internet purchase. Not only do these padlocks circumvent the key distribution problem, but they are also effectively uncrackable. Not surprisingly, Diffie, Hellman and Merkel have become heroes of the information age. However, there are also some forgotten heroes. It recently came to light that British cryptographers working at GCHQ in Cheltenham also invented the idea of mathematical padlocks before the Americans made their breakthrough. But they never gained any recognition because their research was classified. James Ellis was a curious and slightly eccentric character, a code expert who joined GCHQ's Communications Electronic Security Group on the 1st of April 1965. He always challenged the orthodoxy, he relished apparently impossible problems, and he became obsessed with the problem of key distribution. He was notorious for hoarding scientific journals, and he would regularly sift through the publications searching for inspiration. One day in 1969, he stumbled upon a paper that got him thinking about a possible solution to the key distribution problem. Later that night, while lying in bed, he had a revelation. He envisaged the same sort of mathematical padlock that the Americans would develop some 5 years later. James Ellis wrote a brief memorandum outlining his breakthrough, which was immediately classified top secret by his bosses. At this stage, Ellis had grasped the concept of a mathematical padlock, but he was unable to do the mathematics required to turn the idea into a workable system. 3 years would pass before two young Cambridge graduates built on Ellis's idea, inventing two separate types of mathematical padlock. First, there was Clifford Cox, who had only just been recruited by GCHQ. Within a few hours of hearing about Ellis's work, he had come up with a complete solution to the key distribution problem. Then Malcolm Williamson, another GCHQ rookie, tried to prove that Cox had made a mistake because his breakthrough seemed to be too good to be true. Instead of finding a flaw in Cox's method, he ended up inventing his independent method, another concrete solution to the key distribution problem. The threesome of Ellis, Cox and Williamson had made the greatest breakthrough in the history of secret communication, but their genius went unrecognized by the rest of the world. The nature of cryptographic research means that many of its practitioners have had to come to terms with the fact that they can never achieve wealth, fame, or glory. Charles Babbage, a pioneer of modern computing, made the greatest breakthrough in code breaking of the 19th century, but his achievement was not publicized because of its value to the nation during the Crimean War. Similarly, Alan Turing was one of the foremost code breakers at Bletchley Park during the Second World War, but his vital contribution to the war effort was not recognized until after his death. The Navajo code talkers, whose code was used to great effect in the Pacific Campaign, were forbidden to talk about their courageous war of words for over two decades. Ellis, Cox, and Williamson could not reveal their brilliant achievement to fellow cryptographers, family, and friends, although Cox was allowed to tell his wife what he had done, because she too worked at GCHQ and had security clearance. In the mid-1970s, when Diffie, Hellman, and Merkel began independently to rediscover what had already been invented at GCHQ, the three Britons had to watch in silence as the Americans took all the credit for what was a brilliant piece of research. By the mid-1980s, the whole world knew about the solution to the key distribution problem, and so there was really nothing to be lost in GCHQ revealing the contribution of Ellis, Cox, and Williamson. In fact, there were distinct advantages in going public. The ethos of Thatcherism meant that GCHQ was expanding its services beyond the traditional military and diplomatic customer, and an announcement claiming credit for the greatest cryptographic invention in history would certainly have boosted its reputation among potential customers. Just as GCHQ were about to go public in 1987, retired British intelligence officer Peter Wright published his controversial memoirs, Spycatcher, which was sufficiently embarrassing to engender a hats-on, heads-down attitude, which in turn meant that the work of Ellis, Cox, and Williamson remained classified. It would take another decade before GCHQ would eventually be ready to go public, 28 years after Ellis's initial breakthrough. In the summer of 1997, the British government decided that Clifford Cox could reveal the secret history of GCHQ's breakthrough in secret communication later in the year at a conference that he would be attending on the 18th of December. At last, Clifford Cox and Graham Williamson would get the credit they deserved. But sadly, James Ellis, aged 73, died just 1 month before the conference. In a recently declassified document written in 1987, Ellis recorded his contribution to public key cryptography, including his thoughts on the secrecy that so often surrounds cryptographic work. Cryptography is a most unusual science. Most professional scientists aim to be the first to publish their work, because it is through dissemination that the work realizes its value. In contrast, the fullest value of cryptography is realized by minimizing the information available to potential adversaries. Revelation of secrets is normally only sanctioned in the interests of historical accuracy after it has been demonstrated that no further benefit can be obtained from continued secrecy. The code book.